If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back, everybody, to the channel. A special shout out to Jay Group for sending me this incredible story that I am sharing with you tonight is part two of this four-part series. They are at this cabin in the woods. The snow is falling. It is incredibly cold outside, and three children are now missing. What is going to happen? Stay tuned. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. I realized I was lying face down in the snow and someone, a child, was yelling at me.
Mr. Creppy, Mr. Creppy, are you okay? Oh, Jesus. Now he passed out too. What kind of scout leader?
I struggled to get to my feet and found the world was spinning. Gibson was looking up at me worriedly, as were Jeff and Peter, the two remaining Boy Scouts from my troop that had started out as five. My son, as well as the other two, Rick and Steve, were now gone. They had disappeared in the night, vanished without a trace in the snowstorm. They had wanted to earn their winter badges, which had required them to sleep outdoors in a tent during the winter. But it had gotten so cold during the night. We had also gotten a massive downpour of snow, which had blanketed the lake in a large quantity of fresh powder. How had I not realized it happening? I should have checked on them, I realized. I hadn't even gone to check on them. Who knew how long they had been gone? What kind of scout leader was I? What kind of father? The boys were yelling at me and I only heard it as a vague background noise, as well as the ringing in my ears that was my chronic tinnitus. That was when I looked out onto the lake and saw the fishing hut. Maybe that's where the boys had gone. Of course. It had been cold in the tent, and they had decided to go over and see if they could cheat by sneaking off into the warmth of the fishing hut. Their tracks had just been covered over by the freshly fallen snow. I ran down to the lake and out onto the ice, sprinting as quickly as I could through the snow and towards the fishing hut. Racing across the ice and through the thick snow took a while, but I eventually arrived at the little hut and opened the door, praying that the three boys would be inside. The door was open and the snow was drifting in. There was no one in the hut, but the interior was splattered with vast quantities of blood. It was frozen on the walls and the ceiling. The hole in the ice had been covered by the snow blowing in, and the place looked abandoned. I saw a six-pack of beer cans, unopened, sitting on the ground in the corner, frozen in a pool of congealed blood. Tackle and fishing rods were scattered haphazardly everywhere, but there was no sign of anyone aside from the blood. My heart was pounding in my chest, and I felt like I couldn't focus with the overwhelming terror I was feeling for my son and myself, if I'm going to be honest. Whoever had done this was a violent madman. Unless it was the animals. Wolves, perhaps. My mind grappled with the possibilities. It was possible that whoever was in the fishing hut had hurt the boys and taken them somewhere. The other boys were yelling something from the shore, and I heard their voices rise up in panicked urgency.
Help!
I looked back and saw Mr. Dreschier was there, and he was yanking on Peter's wrist, while Jeff flailed at his arms at him inefficiently, punching him in the belly.
Stop it! Yelled Jeff.
You must leave! You must go from here. It isn't safe for you.
As I ran towards the shore, I saw the dark clouds rolling in. The sky was full of them, coming up from the head of the lake. And with them came the cold blowing wind, nearly knocking me off my feet as I ran through the blowing snow. It obscured my vision and I couldn't see what was happening with the boys. What the hell was he doing to them? My face went numb and somehow felt full of pins and needles and pain all at the same time. The wind was suddenly very cold. I pulled up my jacket as I ran and yelled at the madman to stop and leave the damn kids alone. Finally, after what seemed like forever, I reached them and pulled him off of Peter. I shoved him hard and the old man fell to the ground, looking defiant and angry as he struggled to get up in the deep snow.
You're my arm!
Peter was screaming, and I saw it was indeed hanging unnaturally at his side. Jeff was screaming as well and crying, and Gibson was barking, taking the odd attempted bite at Mr. Dreschier's legs. His pants had holes from the teeth already, and I could see his socks were drenched in blood from her bites.
"Get your damn beast away from me!"
he was yelling, crab walking backwards away from her in the snow.
"It's with him! It's doing his bidding!"
I got a hold of Gibson's collar, not because I was worried for his safety so much as for hers. It was clear what had happened now. This maniac had taken the boys.
"Where are they? What the hell did you do with my son?"
His face broke into a grin that stretched high on his face like a joker. Broad front teeth and lips red from the cold, peeled and broken with dried skin stretched taut and bleeding.
"He took them, it wasn't me. He took them, yes indeed."
For some reason, I didn't trust him. Don't ask me why. Maybe it was the fact that he had just been trying to kidnap the other two boys. I made him take us to his cottage. I tried to drive over in the minivan, but it wouldn't start. As if the battery were dead. This caused me to nearly break into a full-blown panic attack. But I took some deep breaths to try to calm myself and focus. We needed to get out of there, I realized. There was a storm rolling in. We had caught a bit of it overnight, but now I could see the black clouds very close and threatening. The snow was already starting up again. We made him walk just ahead of us so we could keep an eye on him. Peter was screaming the whole time and cradling his arm. I just hoped that Mr. Dreschier's car was better equipped for the snow and would be able to get us out of there. He would get his wish and we would leave, if we could. And we would be taking him straight to the nearest police station. But when we arrived at his cottage after a long trudging walk through the snow, the boys weren't there. We searched the whole cottage and found nothing. I questioned him about it more, but it was clear that he wasn't talking. I was worried perhaps he had taken them into a shack out in the woods somewhere, or perhaps into a different cottage that he had keys to. I worried that they could be tied up somewhere, freezing to death, getting colder by the minute as this maniac stalled us by his bullshit.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The car keys were hanging from the hook by the front door, so I tried to start it, thinking that we could drive around the other cottage at least and check out if the boys were there. But the car wouldn't start. Mr. Dreschier began to laugh as I got out and opened the hood. I knew most nothing about cars, but I could tell when all the spark plugs were missing from one.
"You son of a... where are they?"
"The boys are the spark plugs,"
he cackled again. Trudging back to our cabin, the snow really began to fall. It became hard to see in the constant white haze of the snow, and I made the boys walk close together behind me in single file. I told them to keep track of each other, buddy system style. We were freezing cold by the time we got back to the cottage. Peter seemed to be in shock, and I realized I had no choice. We would have to ride it out. Perhaps the boys would come back on their own. Maybe they were on a hike after all, but I really doubted it. Mr. Dreschier didn't fight when I tied him to the chair. I told him it was just for a little while, and he just smiled and nodded, then began to hum to himself off-key. I told Jeff to make a fire. It would keep him busy and allow me to look at Peter's arm. I had a feeling it was dislocated, judging by his constant screaming and the way it was hanging malformed at his side. "Hold still," I said.
"I hate you, I hate you, I want to go home!"
Peter was pissed. I couldn't really blame him. I had dislocated my shoulder once playing football, and the coach had popped it back in on the sidelines. It was not a good time. At least he wasn't shivering and sitting there with a 1,000-yard stare anymore, so that was good, I guessed. Jeff had gotten the fire going, but it was still freezing in the cottage. I looked out the window and saw nothing but white. Mr. Drescher continued to hum softly off-key, which gave everything an even more unsettling feeling. "Please stop that." He ignored me. The wind began to howl outside, and the walls of the cabin shook with the force of it, trembling from the power of the mighty gusts rolling in off the lake all around us. Gibson was laying on the ground with her head down, looking scared and shivering again. I moved her closer to the fire and sat with her, rubbing her old fur and trying to warm her up. I pulled Peter over as well and made him sit near the fire with us. Jeff was still stoking it with more wood, and he had it going pretty well. "Good job, kid. You got that fire going great."
"I love fire," he said back quietly. "Setting fire is the one thing I'm good at."
"I'm just going to pretend I didn't hear that for now. Promise you won't set me or the cabin on fire at least, and we'll just talk about all that later." Holy shit. I was going to have to talk to Jeff's parents once we got back to town. Add that to the list. Peter was looking over with wide eyes. "Dude, you're so freaking weird."
"I know."
He stared at the glowing embers of the fire. I had brought a whole pile of wood the night before, so we had enough fuel for the fire. And at least it was getting drier by the minute. It would just be a matter of waiting out the storm. But I was terrified for my son. He was out there somewhere. He and his friends had to be alive somewhere, I just knew it. We waited for a couple of hours for the dangerous winds and snow to subside, so that we could mount a proper search before dark. It was past noon when we heard a sound at the door, like someone was coming up the front steps. I sprang to my feet, thinking it could be Greg running to the front door. I tried to open it against the wind, but found it nearly impossible. With all of my body weight pushing against it, I shoved it open and looked outside. Steve was out there, my son's friend who lived down the street from us. Both the rest of them were nowhere to be seen. I ran down to help him up the stairs, and that was when I saw his left eye was missing. The orbital socket was an empty hole, and it was weeping blood. He was swaying on his feet and looking exhausted. His coat was ripped to tatters, and his face was bloodied. He was talking like he had a concussion, slurring his words as he spoke.
"He came for us, Mr. Creppy. He came, just came right in, picked us up like it was nothing, and carried us away. He made me watch. Made me watch."
He broke down into sobbing, and I picked him up and helped him up the stairs. His nose was bright red, encrusted with frost, as were his cheeks, eyelashes, and mouth. I brought him over to the fire, and he recoiled at the sight of Mr. Drescher tied up in the chair in the corner.
"Was it him? Was he the one who took you?"
"No, not him. The tall man."
Mr. Drescher leaned forward and spoke softly to the boy.
"You saw him? You saw him and he let you go? That means he's coming here, because he doesn't let anyone go. Not ever. Just lets them go back to their friends for a little while to tell their story, to make them more afraid. He loves your fear, almost as much as he loves the cold, and the hunger is his victims. Keep your bellies full. Don't be afraid to eat in these troubled times now. Trust me, you will want to keep full."
My stomach growled and I heard a loud scratching sound coming from the kitchen window. then from the back door, then from the front door, and the side and all around us at once. It was the sound of nails on a chalkboard, the same as in my nightmare.
"What the hell is that noise?"
Peter whined. The sound of the howling wind and scratching sounds combined with laughter of Mr. Drescher, the nervous barking of my dog, two boys weeping, and not to mention the crackling of a fire being poked by a burgeoning young pyromatic. What exactly had I gotten myself into?
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.